This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fishing Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend. Today is a great day, one. Two, we're going to have a great chat here. So I'm talking here with the we hunt. Looks like you guys will spell that. Ed Jack. So today we're going to focus, it's like home on the range. We're going to talk about our recap in Wyoming. So separately, we spent about 2 weeks. We spent a week each, or 5 days each, at separate times in Wyoming, hunting the same species. Well, same, but different. So you're changing it now. The way we hunt. There we go. That's better now. Good. So got Ryan and Emily here, and Jack. So Jack is my longtime buddy. I guess Ryan and Emily are my longtime buddies too. But they're more closely involved with Harvesting Nature. Jack is a longtime fan, first time caller. So
he was enthralled by your soothing voice. That's why.
Yeah. Jack, feel free to, we'll give you a chance to introduce yourself if you like.
All right, yeah, real quick. Jack, yeah, like Justin said, we became friends when we were stationed in Key West together, and everything I know about hunting, I learned from this guy, so thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. Whose ding was that?
That's mine, the first timer here.
Thanks, Jack. Welcome, Jack.
Well, welcome to the show.
Oh, bye, Jack.
Where's that remove button?
Gosh.
No,
we love Jack.
Yeah, no, we're good. Cool, man. Well, yeah, glad to have you on the show. I think last year, so we did a podcast recording from the field when we were in Wyoming last year. So a little background, Jack likes to go with AJ and myself up to Wyoming and hunt. Last year, he took a year off due to some sweet training that he did for work. But outside of that, so you missed the opportunity to record podcasts then, but we're catching you back up this year. And then really the year before that, so back 2 years ago is when we had the great epiphany to start this show. It was actually that trip that led to it. So cool things have happened since. Let me throw out a couple updates. So for those who don't know, we joined the Waypoint Podcast Network, Waypoint Outdoor Network. They have an app called Waypoint TV. You can go there to listen to our shows. You can go to our website and listen to our shows, or you can continue to listen to our show the same place you always listen to our show. We migrated over to those folks because it's a like-mind collective of outdoor lovers, fishermen, anglers, hunters, gatherers, cooks. We're actually the first food-focused podcast on that platform, so we're really stoked about that. So it's us, and when I say us, it's the Wild Fish and Game Podcast. And on a separate channel, you can take a look at Antler and Fin, which is our audio cookbook that walks you step-by-step through whatever recipes we decide to post up there. Give you like a real stop and play opportunity to go through a recipe if you just want to listen to it versus reading it, which I think is a great option if you like the Alexas or the Siris or whatever. You can tell them to stop and play and all that jazz as you go through each step. So those are fun things going on. Outside of that, we've got our last cooking class for the semester coming up this month here in November. We're going to take a pause through December and January, and then in January we will kick off our full Harvest of Nature Supper Club, but as a sort of semester format. So my plan is to roll out all the classes we're going to be doing over the next 3 months after that, so mid-January, February, March, and part of April, sort of like going back to school again. We'll list all those all at once, and you can take your pick, and we'll offer great deals and special offers, and it'll be a great time, and we'll all have fun and cook delicious wild game.
So the pate that I missed, I can go back.
He actually has not made the pate.
Oh, is that the last
rescheduled
one?
That class. Yeah, that is the last one. So Adam's duck liver whiskey pat whiskey. Hold on. Whiskey maple duck pate is this month, so November.
I might have to get back on that because Ryan thawed out some liver.
Yep.
Accidentally. Ooh. The other day.
Wasn't labeled.
We didn't know what it was.
Thought it was a giant top rounder. I don't know what it, anyway. Yeah, it's a liver.
What kind of liver is it? You don't know?
Deer. Whitetail.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely whitetail because of the year that I didn't label anything, it was definitely a whitetail.
Nice. I, too, I saved a liver, not to jump way ahead, but I saved a liver for my antelope. I'm going to give my liver activities another go this year. Last year, I was very much... Well, I tried to make a pate out of antelope liver, which I don't know if I would recommend that. And then I did the great liver soaking test of 2020, which came out really great.
Yeah, I like that one.
I don't know what I'm going to do with this one, but I did. So we'll go through and we're going to let you guys kind of take the lead with telling us a recap of your stories from your antelope trip, because this is your guys' first year up, and then Jack and I will just sprinkle in some delicious nuggets of antelope whatever information from ours in there, because ours, while probably record setting, was not that exciting. So,
well, like, how detailed do you want? Do you like the Cliff Notes version, or do you want like Jack London?
We got 54 minutes to burn, so we can talk about whatever we want.
Stretch out.
Yeah. All right, so let's start at the top. So drawing tags. So we definitely miscommunicated drawing tags.
Again.
Because, again, we got to get better at this. So you guys put in for tags. We put in for the second draw.
Yeah, we put in, and
by we, I didn't do nothing.
So I even messed up on our end, not to muddy the waters anymore. But I thought I put in for a party draw, which I did end up putting for a party draw. But when I got selected, or when we got selected, I literally just picked any unit like on the eastern side of Wyoming. I was just like, yeah, that's closer to us than anything. But when I got selected, it said, you have been selected, and it was just me, and it didn't have any of Emily's information at all, period. Like, nothing. I was like, whoa, I guess I drew an antelope tag. And she goes, I thought that you put in for a party. I'm like, I thought I did too, but there was literally nothing that said party. It was my name, my social, my birth date, all that.
I don't think it puts, Jack, correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't, it notifies you individually. It doesn't say, like, your party drew.
Yeah, let's see, because I did it with AJ's party. You went separate. I got my own notification.
Yeah, which I didn't know that, so I just get it, and I'm like, well, honey, I drew, I'm sorry, I guess you didn't. I thought I put us in for a party draw.
I was like, bye, I guess you're going to Wyoming by yourself, because I ain't driving with you.
Is that why you text me?
And they're like, well, you know, we're going to send you your tags in the mail, and blah, blah, blah. And so it was like 10 days of me planning a solo antelope trip. I had it like a quarter of the way planned, and then two tags show up in the mail. And I was like, oh, nice. I told you I put in for a party. Had you going this whole time. So that was the draw. And so then it was, hey, we...
And then I was actually a little upset that I had to go.
Why?
Because I'd already made plans. Like, he's going to go do this, and I'm going to go do my own thing. And then I was like, nah, guess we're both going. Guess I got to spend some time with him.
Road trip, another one. So that was the draw. And then it was just down to trying to, with your help and stuff, trying to find a landowner. Or landowners. Or
so was your tag land private land only?
No. It was either or.
So separate to what Ryan, so we just collectively, I say we, it's like Jack and AJ and myself, decided we were going to take the year off this year and build a point. But AJ found out that if we apply for the leftover draw in Wyoming, which I think this may be the first year that they did it, normally it just was like, everything was released over the counter after that, I think. I may be getting that mixed up with Colorado. But either way, he called the Wyoming Fish and Game and was like, hey, just to confirm, if I apply for the leftover drawing, will I use my existing preference points? And they said no.
Yeah.
And which is pretty rad, because it's kind of a, I guess it's not a way to circumvent the system, but it's like a loophole to, yeah. So the tag that was left was, so a zone we normally hunt, it was like across the highway, the next zone over, but it was private land only. But when we go down there, we hunt a mix of public and private, and the gentleman's ranch we hunt on also has a piece of property on that side of the highway as well. So we decided to put in for that last minute. So that's how we missed the whole coordination piece, because you guys had actually already drawn by the time that we were.
But both of ours were leftover tags.
You guys drew leftover tags too?
Yep.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Okay.
And but his came like a week before mine did.
Yeah, it's another reason I thought, yeah, that it was mine. My tag came first, and then hers came right after, so.
But they were both leftovers.
It's weird.
Yeah, I don't understand.
It made the already confusing part of not knowing what to do more confusing, because we didn't know how we did it.
Yeah, so I don't know, the whole drawing thing, like putting in for the primary. So next year, I think we're going to put in for the primary draw, but in a different zone too, that we've kind of scoped out, that we're also going to put in for mule deer, that we went to last year for mule deer. And there was some great pronghorn there. But, all right, so planning. What type of planning? We were talking landowner location for you guys. How did that play out?
It was kind of just getting to the point that we had decided that we were just going to public land hunt, because trying to call the game warden in that county was impossible. And I hate saying that.
I have his number.
I have his number.
I have both of their numbers.
He just didn't answer or return phone calls.
He finally did, but by that point I'd already had my questions answered by the biologist. Mm-hmm. And when I called her, because very wannabe by the rules, never hunted in Wyoming, and so I was like, all right, I've read the regulations front to back and pretty good at reading regulations, and I'm still just like not 100% sure. And both of their voicemails, both the wardens and the biologist, said, hey, we don't know anybody that has, you know, land that they want hunters right now. But when I called her, I was just like, I know your voicemail said this, and it was after I talked to her for about half an hour, and I was like, do you happen to know anybody? She was like, actually, as a matter of fact, I got a number from, you know, I got a name and a number last week. She was like, I'll give it to you. And called the dude, like, super nice. And I thought he was kind of, I don't know the word I'm trying to think of, but he asked me, he was like, when I was asking him about the trespass fees, he was like, what do you think's fair? And I'm like, like, oh, okay.
$25.
Three is fair.
I'm like, oh, fair. All right. I said, you know, honestly, we've never hunted there. I said, we have some friends that have hunted there, and this is what they pay. I was like, I literally have no idea if that's high or low. He's like, no, I think I could probably get $50 more than that, but that seems fair. And so we got to pay a little bit less because of y'all.
Yeah.
When I would have had no clue what to say, like $20.
He's like, well, I'm thinking like 500 more, yeah. But okay.
Yeah, I mean, I had reached out on social media to just my old military contacts, anybody living in this part of Wyoming, you know, hit me up. Anybody's got family there, hit me up. And we tried everything.
Wyoming DIY hunting Facebook page.
Yep, had nothing. We tried looking on Onyx, Base Map. Couldn't find any landowner information at all.
What was that one website that you could, like, pay for information?
It was the county.
I don't know.
It was something Wyoming County.
I literally called every number that was in our zone, and nobody, like, most of them weren't even outfitters anymore or knew nothing.
Huh.
Like,
yeah.
But you found a place to go.
We did.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy.
And then you...
So the biologist, the guy that the biologist recommended, ended up being the guy that he was talking to, or that Emily was talking to, super, super cool guy. We drove up through a snowstorm. They had a massive snow, like just bad storm come in a week before we got there and then the night we got there. But we rolled up to this guy's place and he walks out wearing Kryptek and Black Rifle Coffee shirts and hats, and I was like, I already enjoy this. I already enjoy our friendship. Like, we're going to be friends immediately. Super, super nice guy, and kind of gave us a tour of his place, and he goes, well, I've got to go to work. You guys have fun. I'll, you know, have fun today. Text me pictures or whatever. And that was it. And,
yeah, lock the gate.
Nice. Yeah, lock the gate when you leave.
That's cool.
So there was snow on the ground when we got there. We started hunting 8 a.m., went and sat, moved around several different places, and hunted until 1 p.m., and we had drove through from Oklahoma the night before, and we were just exhausted. We hadn't seen anything. The snow was starting to melt, and our place that we were staying was an hour from there. I was like, let's just leave. We haven't seen anything. Let's just leave, hit some public land on the way back, and then go get some food because we haven't ate since breakfast.
Yeah, and breakfast was... essentially hadn't really eaten since Oklahoma nor slept.
Yeah.
You know, the day before.
Let's go scout some public on the way back to the Airbnb and then crash, take a siesta, and then come back out in the evening. And so we leave there, and we're 2 miles from the place that we had just spent half a day on. And I was like, hey, there's a bunch of antelope on the side of the road. Like, look over there, Ryan. There's the antelope that we were looking for.
We had got on the road and took off all our camo, put on my driving clothes again. 3 minutes later, we saw 200 antelope.
That was probably not 200. That's a little bit of an exaggeration.
It might have been 150.
I tell you, though, the herds compared to, like, last year and the year before, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jack, but, like, the herds were plussed up this year. Like, they were good numbers.
Yeah, especially that one that you took your doe from that just kind of popped up out of nowhere. You'd walk that whole property and somehow, like, I don't know, how many was it? Like 40 or 50 just came out of nowhere?
It must have been a ton. I'll tell that story in a minute. Right. I don't know why.
There were so many, like, on camera. I've got it on wide angle, and there are antelope from the left side of the frame, 300 yards to the right side of the frame.
Nice.
A mixture of laying down, feeding, walking around. I mean, they were just... The problem was they were literally...
Well, you need to start. You need to back up a little bit.
Okay.
We saw the antelope, and then what happened?
Well, I'm just saying, we saw them, they were literally, like, they're 20 yards from the fence. Like, we're on the highway, uh-huh. There's the fence. They start 20 yards from the fence and then go inwards. And so I just look, and I'm like, I don't know why, I just look up, and I saw this old farmhouse up on the hill. Like, it looked like it was the same property, you know? There wasn't really a fence separate. It was one little barbed wire fence, but... So I turn the corner and I drive up the hill, and she kind of looks at me, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm going to knock on the door, see what happens. And long, long driveway, go all the way up there. There's dogs, like, descending on the truck, farm dogs, you know, and they're coming in from everywhere. And I go up, and there's, an old farm truck and, like, this beat-up old car, and that was it. I'm like, no one's going to be home. And the snow had started to melt, so everything was crazy muddy already. And went up and knocked on the door, and to my surprise, I hear the rustling of an old wooden floor, you know, back inside the house. And I'm like, sweet. And the inside door opens, and there's the screen door blocking us, and it's an elderly gentleman, and he tries to open the door, but his screen door is stuck. He can't get the door open. And it's one of these old screen doors that has, like, a little slider window right in the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
He cracks the window about 4 inches and puts his head down. He's like, can I help you? I said, well, I hope so. I kind of told him the story, told him who we are, where we're from. I said, we got 2 doe tags, and you've got about 100 antelope on your property down there. Can we go shoot a couple? And his attitude changed. He goes, there's antelope on my property? I said, I think so, sir. If they're right there, they're not. And he said, they're not to that other road. And I said, no, they're right there. And he goes, go kill them. I said, you're sure? He goes, absolutely. Go kill them. He said, I'm sorry, I can't get my door open. Like, no, you're fine. We're going to go shoot a couple antelope, and we'll be back, I think. So it was really wild. I got back in the truck, and everybody's like, so? And I'm like, we're going to go shoot a couple antelope, I think. And tell her the story, and the guy's staring at the little crack of the window still. And we drove down the hill and went, and now we're trying to find a place to park because it is literally off the side of the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, this is going to seem sketchy. Anyway, so we drive past them 3 or 4 times to try to get a good vantage point. The problem is they're on the low part of the highway's the low ground, and 1,000 yards to the south is the high ground, and there's nothing in between. Wyoming, right? So there's no plateaus mm-hmm. to get on. There's no ridges. There's no nothing. It's just flat, completely flat, except off to the, I guess, the west. Anyway, so we park the truck and put all our camo back on. I get take my driving clothes off and load up the rifles and stuff. And I said, let's just cross this fence and head to the south and try to get a little bit of elevation on them, I guess. Like, when I say a little bit, I mean like 2 feet of elevation. And but when we did that, once we kind of got up to this fence line, we looked over and we were shooting towards the highway. We couldn't do that. And plus, 100 of them were staring at us. And we're like, okay, this isn't going to work. And we were probably at that point 300-ish yards or 400 yards. And so we made the decision to walk back towards the highway, hop this little fence, which put us in about 8 inches of melting ice water. Thank God we had our Crispies on. And we literally stalked against the barbed wire fence against the side of the highway. So,
oh yeah,
imagine you're in bright orange and there's semis passing you, but you're trying to be sneaky. Yeah, I felt.
No, it's totally a thing.
I felt ridiculous. I was like, any minute, some guy's.
It was like somebody's gonna honk their.
Someone's
horn
gonna come like, wah, wah, wah.
I was like, we're not in Southeast Oklahoma.
You know, there's cars passing 15 feet away, and I'm belly crawling, not belly crawling at that point, but we're. Looks, you know, carefully stalking against this barbed wire fence. So we finally get up to a point where I think we can both take a shot because we were going to try to do a command shot where we could both shoot at the same time and get it all on camera. That was another big thing.
That wasn't going to happen.
And she could see, you know, she could see her doe. I couldn't see mine. And then trying to get the camera on at the same time, it was just a nightmare.
Then they would change. It was like, dope is changing constantly. On the guns, and it was like, this is not going to work. We're just going to have to shoot one at a time because this is a nightmare. And he was like, just go ahead and shoot. And I was like, no, I wanted us to shoot together. He was like, no, I'd rather have one than none. I was like, yeah, that's a pretty good logic.
Yep.
Because we had this plan, and it's like, now the plan's not working.
But we kept bumping them because they could see us. We kept bumping them because there was literally there's no defile to get behind. There was no high ground to get behind. It was just... us
sounds
them.
Like though they were pretty calm.
They were.
Yeah, they were.
It was crazy. But there were so many of them moving constantly, it was just really hard to hit for him to get you know, dope on one, like the range on one.
And get the range on hers and get the range on mine, get the camera on both.
Yeah.
And then they would both move. And then we start over
and
again.
And then we'd literally arguing the entire time. He's like, the one on the right. I'm like, which right? He's like, the far right. I was like, the one that's facing me? He's like, no, the one that's turned the other direction. I'm like, no, not that one. The one to the left of that. Well, which left? Like, which one's the buck? And I'm like, you know, the buck with the cheek patch. And he was like, I don't see a cheek patch. And I was like, what do you mean you don't see a cheek patch?
it was a mess. And then the whole time, I'm trying to film it. And so finally, I was like, hey, you shoot. We'll film it. And so she finally... We find some that had bed down, they'd gotten up, and there was one that hadn't got up, and so it was still just kind of chilling. And was like, what are y'all girls doing? I'm just going to lay here for a little bit. And so she was right at 420 yards and gave her dope on the grindle and this heart shot and elevator just kind of finished. She was already laying down, but finished dropping out, which is pretty considerable shot considering the vital. So I was only about 8 inches tall at that point, laying down.
Nice.
So she didn't move. I mean, she just laid there. I'm like, well, okay. And we expect them all kind of run off. And the whole herd ran. At this point, we kind of moved to a hill. They ran up on top of the skyline. And I started to get on some. And right about then, they crossed over the top of it. They're like,
ugh. Yeah, because shooting suppressed. I don't know if it was because it was 400-yard shot or if it was because we were suppressed. They didn't get excited. I mean, they were like, hey, something's wrong, you know. Karen over there is not feeling well. Let's like kind of move on, but they weren't.
And I don't know.
They didn't freak out.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because she was laying down, so she didn't run. She just finished laying down. She just literally put her head down. And so
I tell you, they get really like they get squirrely and kind of like out of it when you shoot. Like I've two different scenarios. So like I've shot before and. Or someone else is shot, and the herd runs to you. Like, they don't know where the shot comes from, so they just run, and it just happens to be in your direction. So I've had them close, like, 100 yards, and then I'll shoot for the second follow-on shot. And then, like, this trip, our first night, AJ, we got on a herd. Jack put a stock on them. They bumped, but AJ and I had looped around to the south and kind of set up for a longer range shot, and AJ took a shot at 500, and I don't know if he shot high or low, but missed the buck he was aiming at, but they kept coming. They just like, I don't know, they kind of like, they ran maybe 50 yards and then just started walking again, but they continued to walk towards us to where they closed down to like, what, Jack, 340, 320?
Yeah, well, he took his shot at 350. I think was his final. I was out of the game because I put my hand in a cactus.
Oh,
yep,
no.
That's right.
Yeah. Side note, I did the same thing. Probably not as bad as you did, but...
Get into cactus?
Yeah, we found cactus.
You're initiated.
That was horrible.
It's the official Wyoming hunting cactus.
I think we may have got it on camera. I think.
Oh, I don't want to see
it's
that.
It's just cussing.
Yeah, it was bad. I was so mad at Wyoming right then at that moment.
Those little cactuses are not forgiving either.
No, and... I know what I'd set. I think I'd set my big camera down, and I had reached back down to pick it up, and I just grabbed a handful of space when I did, and it was one of those jumpy. I call them jumping cactus right next to it, and I put my hand right in the center of it. Yeah,
you know where else you'll get cactus thorns too is from the legs of the antelope when you like drag them out or carry them.
Yes, found one that way.
Which is weird because I mean I've never like. Autopsied the legs afterwards, but it doesn't seem to like hurt them or bother them. Yeah,
but yeah, so maybe she shot hers, and I was getting ready to put another shot on one up right on the ridge line. I was like, I don't know if I want to shoot on the ridge. I mean, I knew nothing was behind there, but
because they were skyline,
yeah, they were right on the skyline. Anyway, they busted off the top, and I was like, well, maybe you know that seems like a great big hill. We couldn't see what was behind it. Looked at the map, and it looked like it fell off after that. So I was like, let's just go up there. So we got up kind of towards the top, and it was on a power line, not a road, but just a line. And I kind of got on my hands and knees and started crawling. Emily got behind me, and I looked over the hill thinking they were going to be 600, 700, 800 yards, you know, gone. And they were like at 300, like right there. And so we slow crawled up, and one on the far right just kind of hanging out by herself. And I'm like, well, okay. I mean, it was a pretty easy shot. She actually ran, I don't know, 50 yards or something, and then just tipped over, and then I mean, Emily's was very easy to drag out because it was right almost on the road as you walked up this hill. Mine was over the top of the hill on the backside.
And we got turned around walking to it, so we drug it, like, should have drug it in a straight line, and we drug it like this D shape.
Yeah, if you look at our maps, I downloaded our maps from my watch afterwards, and it was this giant, like...
Yeah, it looks like we made a D, the letter D, like a capital D, and yeah. I was like... What in the crap were we doing? It was like, this is not even the right direction. We drug it like a mile and a half. It yeah. was so far.
It was funny. But, yeah, and then I went up and gave him his landowner tags and...
paid him a couple hundred bucks.
Paid him a couple hundred. He didn't ask for it. We were expecting to pay a trespass fee anyway, so... Nice. That might go a long way. Did that, and I said, hey, and after I paid him, by the way, do you mind if we skin these and quarter them up right here on the side of the road on your property? He said, no, go ahead. So nice. We had our Spintech hoist right there on the side of the highway just whittling away at two antelope as the cars passed by.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm really surprised the game warden didn't show up. Us just cleaning two antelope
roadside.
On the side of the road like that.
I mean, outside of, like, the check station, I've only seen the wardens, like, driving around a couple times in Wyoming.
Well, their
like
counties are so big, too. I know there's yeah. a ton, and we were there during the week, so it could have been his day off or lots of factors involved, but mm-hmm. I would not have been surprised if he had shown up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I felt like even though the landowner hadn't asked for money, that was the right and ethical thing to do, because, like, I don't want... the two non-residents first timing in Wyoming to be the jerks that didn't pay their trespass fees because the neighbor next door didn't say anything about it. And I was like, they probably talk. Regardless, we need to do this because yep. dealing with, I'm sure, non-residents all the time is a pain in the butt. So,
yeah. I know there's definitely, like, it supports an industry around it. Like, a lot of those towns are very friendly to...
Dude, everybody that we met was super friendly.
Yeah.
The people who ran the Airbnb, the people we went to the bar with, like, they were just...
Yeah, we went to local watering hole a couple nights just for...
We're so great.
It's like, it was like going to the state fair. It was amazing. I had a great time.
And they actually had signs that said, welcome hunters.
Yeah, it was neat.
In there.
But what we found ourselves with at the end of that very, very long day, because... to me, the day had started the day before in Oklahoma because we still hadn't slept, really, or eaten.
Oh, yeah.
Or anything.
I did almost pass out.
Yeah, her blood sugar dropped out. We still hadn't made it to our Airbnb. Like, our suitcases were still in the bed of the truck. And now we have two dead antelope in a freezer. And that was day one of five. I'm like, well, we can't get our money back on the Airbnb, so now we start our 4-day or 5-day vacation.
Which was, like, the best thing ever.
There was no pressure at that point. It was just like, let's sleep in, let's hang out, let's find something else to go hunt. I mean, it was great.
So did you find something else to go hunt?
We did.
Yes.
We did. So day...
Three. Because we did B-roll footage on day two, is what messed me up on day three.
Yeah, so we went out and shot some footage for the channel on day two. Did some reviews over some gear that we had taken. Found a really cool piece of property. I mean, it's beautiful. And then hung out that night with the locals. And then day three, we looked up. All right, I called Wyoming Fishing Game. And I said, what tags are available for non-residents, period? And she said, she looked and she said, there are 1,700 whitetail doe and fawn tags left. I said, okay, for what area? And she told us, and I said, okay. And it was a completely different zone, completely different area. So... we called the original guy who we were going to hunt with that morning and said, hey, do you know anybody in this zone? Actually, yep, I got a friend up there. Let me make a phone call. Makes a phone call, calls back, says, hey, yep, he's got a bunch of winter wheat up there, and he's got whitetails all over it in the evenings. And you guys are welcome to go up there.
Mind you, it's 2 hours southwest of us.
Yes, 2 hours away.
Which, well, I later found out, that's where the zone we normally hunt at.
Oh, really?
Which if you, Ryan didn't tell you this, but yeah, if you would have called me, I could have put you on some land. And public land, too.
Yeah.
Because there's public land I've shot whitetail off of.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, this guy's got, I got a bunch of winter wheat, and he goes, I forgot what he said, but he's like, I'm looking at 20 right now, and I might be making the 20 up, but I'm looking at a bunch of whitetails right now, and this was like the day before we went. Okay. So, I mean, we got a lot of whitetails here in Oklahoma, but we're in Wyoming, and there's tags to burn, and we have 2 more days left, so why not? So we drove the 2 hours.
Vacation's out.
Yeah, vacation's out. We're driving 2 hours away.
I could really give a crap to shoot a whitetail in Wyoming, but...
Yeah,
because as I recollect, let me roll this conversation back a few podcast episodes when we were talking about, actually not even a podcast episode, this was an executive board meeting where we were talking about shooting whitetails in the West.
I don't care. I don't want to. I didn't want to do this. I was more than happy to sit in the Airbnb and drink the local beer. But no, Ryan wants to go shoot whitetail where we have 70 in our backyard at home in Wyoming. But it's okay. We can go. Let's go. Let's go. Spend money. Spend time sitting underneath
an irrigation
pipe in a field.
It was beautiful.
In Wyoming.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
And then I missed. So.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah. No, a complete, like...
I did not miss.
No, I completely messed up. We were doing the B-roll.
Hang on. He wants
to... Oh, sorry.
I want to hear the whole story. You got all right, irrigation.
There was deer.
Thing.
I missed. Nobody wanted to have whitetail in Wyoming. Oh, wait, that was just me.
Okay, so... I'll let you explain the day before, real quick, what we were showing, and then how that led to me hitting mine the next day.
I'm about to be a domestic on this podcast. no, we go out. So I had shot my antelope the day before at 420 yards, and I'm fairly unfamiliar with the scope that's on the gun that I'm shooting. And so when we're doing this B-roll footage, I want my elevation turret at 0. And so, looking over the top of it, I put my elevation turret at 0. It is not at 0. Okay. But I think it's at 0.
It's at 0, but one full rev up.
Yeah, it's at 0, but it's a whole revolution around at 0. It's not at 0 stop, 0.
So she's basically shooting 12 minutes at that point, which is...
Because I was shooting an MRAD instead of MOA, so anyway.
She's dialed in for about 1,100 yards, essentially.
Long ways. Little way.
Okay, I was like, I know what any of this means.
Yeah.
So anyway, we go out there. He's had all these white. When we get there, we actually see some antelope on the property, and I was like, "Heck, if we draw this zone, there's literally antelope on his property."
I think right I sent here. You that video of that antelope at like 15 yards, and you were like, "Yeah, just standing there. I could have thrown my."
Yeah, you were like, "Silly antelope," and I was like, "Wait till you see it try to cross the fence.
Yeah.
Just wait." Did you guys ever see one try to cross the fence?
I don't remember if I watched it cross or not. It ran up and down the fence for 10 minutes as we were walking.
Oh, yeah. So antelope don't jump fences. Yeah. Well, no, they can. I've seen them.
Well, they don't really. Yeah.
They're just lazy.
I don't remember how it crossed, but it took maybe close to 10 minutes for us to walk to this irrigation pipe trailer. It was running up and down the fence the whole time.
I've seen it's the most hilarious thing ever, and I feel bad. Good thing antelope don't listen to this podcast, but they like farmers will not put a bottom barbed wire on there.
Yeah,
and so it'll go to the third one and they'll like crawl underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weirdest. Yeah. So awkward looking. They'll like shuffle underneath it.
So its whole family was over there, but yeah, so we got there. So Emily had put up one full rev up for the sake of this video. And when we left from filming, she never put it all the way back around to the 0 stop on the elevation.
No, I looked over the top of it, and I went the wrong direction. It wasn't for the sake of the video. It was my dumb... not paying attention and looking behind the gun like I was supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was just me being lazy is what happened.
Yeah, so we get there, and we set up, and it was actually, it was gorgeous. You look at our Instagram, we got a couple pictures of it. It's super pretty. Really, really bright green winter wheat. And man, about 5:30-ish, the deer started pouring in. And they came in a string. It was
a lot
of whitetail. We probably saw over 20 or 25 whitetail that night. There was probably 10 on the field or around the field when we shot, but put the cameras out, had mine was right at 300 yards, I think. I forgot what hers was at.
It doesn't matter.
Two something.
It doesn't matter.
and
it was 15,000.
Yeah, it was more like 15,000.
If we'd have been at 1,200 yards, you made a dang good shot. But anyway, so we had this perfect. I mean, if you watch the footage, and it's in the video, but it was 3, 2, 1, and then 2 like.
Simultaneous
suppress shots. Ba-boom!
Command fire couldn't have been any better.
And just one real loud thump.
And Ryan was like, "Did you hit it?" I was like, "Nope."
Elevator just drops out of mine. Neck shot her. She just falls on the ground.
Like, don't know how that happened.
Hers is like, doing, 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 doing.
And like looking around, and I was like, "Nope, completely missed. Don't know how that happened." And he was like, "There's one over to the right." So I look over. This deer is like 125 yards. Like, I literally could throw my gun at it. So I dialed down my turret to, you know, zero more or less at that point, and shoot again. And it was like,
poof. Airball.
And Ryan's like, I was like, and on the video, I was like, what is happening? And Ryan was like, he jumped up and he was like, your turret. And I'm like, what? It's on when it's supposed to be on. He's like, no, it's not. I'm like, yes, it is.
And I reach over and I take her turret and go all the way back to zero.
And I was like, there's a zero stop on this stupid scope. And he was like, yeah, you didn't know that? And I was like, this is literally the second time I've used a scope, Ryan.
It was good.
Oh, God. So mad. I was mad the rest of the night, the entire night, just cutting deer. His deer, not my deer, just cutting deer up, and he had to take me back and take me to the bar because I was mad. Whole 2-hour drive home, I just threw total temper tantrum. Just
talked about how good my shot was, how my deer didn't run anywhere.
Reliving the glory days, you're like, it's great, I was out there. Net,
so I didn't even move, and he was like, oh, I just dropped it, like mic drop. He was like, you're in the next county.
I mean.
It was just... It was lessons learned. We teach long range. And so, like, making that mistake just really got under my skin. I'm still not over it. Because yep. I shouldn't have made that mistake. It was literally 101 long range shooting. Make sure that
so I just got an email from the game warden in Wyoming. And he said that he wants to talk to you about shooting a deer in the next county.
That's right. Zone 2 had a deer shot. It looked like it came from zone 3.
He's questioning about this tag you have.
Yeah, the unfilled one. You can take it.
It's all right. I mean, I have an unfilled tag this year from, well, not filled yet tag from Wyoming. I'll say that.
At least it was a whitetail. And it wasn't our antelope. At least we filled our antelope tags first day. So
yeah, as we kept saying, that's good.
He was like, well, at least we did that. And I was like, no, I should have made this mistake. This is so stupid. I should know better. But regardless.
But so overall, how was your trip? First time hunting in Wyoming.
Awesome, awesome. I was a little unsure with our Airbnb when we first got there. Had a couple little hiccups. But the family that ran it ended up being like very, very cool. Kind of laid to rest my uneasiness about it, and they ended up actually some pretty good friends, and they took us out a couple nights and hung out with them, and now we're texting back and forth. Now we got a place to stay next year if you want to go to Moorcroft.
Oh, which ends up only being 45 minutes from Devil's Tower, which neither one of us had been to. So we got up the next morning after Ryan killed his deer and I missed mine and processed his deer. Because we brought our vacuum sealer with us. And then after we did that, we drove up to Devil's Tower and did a little sightseeing.
Yeah.
Nice.
So it's nice.
I haven't been up there yet.
If you have to, you've already heard Emily's rendition of her mistake, but it's also she has a little cameo of her own in the video where she explains exactly what happened. So for those out there that are getting into long-range shooting, there's a couple of basic rules you need to remember. This is one of them. So they happen, though. Mistakes happen. So you got to own up to them and just not do them again.
I will say, shooting-wise, I'm pretty stoked because we zeroed my scope, my sideways scope, in Oregon, and it held true. Jack and I went out the Saturday before we left here, and I was shooting like a quarter inch high at 100 on the range here, and then I had no problem.
Good.
Reaching out, yeah. Not no.
We still need to. We still need to spin that bad boy.
Yeah, you know, I'll get around to it. I'm gonna wait till the hunting season is over because it's on now, and I don't want to mess with
it. Literally, like having like the window in your car when you press up, it goes down, and when you press the brake, it goes. But if you just learn to drive that way, you're just good.
We'll call it I don't know. You can't even say Kentucky windage. I don't even know what kind of.
I don't know what your windage turret is.
It's like the Bermuda Triangle of scopes right now.
It's like AJ's like, oh, well, you gotta, you know, use your MOA on it. I was like, it's sideways. I was like, I'll just take a guess. He's like, yeah, you better use inches. I was like, yeah, we'll just go for it.
Oh no,
that's great.
Well, so I recapped our initial part. So when we got up there, the first night, we essentially got there with Jack, an hour and a half before shooting light was done.
Yep.
And we got on the ranch and found a herd, and they were not in a great spot. So we had to go to this like, what I would say long, not compared to the next day long, but a less than ideal stock that we put on them, to which we split up. Jack explained his cactus mishap, which you were probably, 200 yards?
Yeah, at first I didn't have a shot on them. They were too far, and I was shooting pretty much at like through the sage grass. So I kind of pulled back. I didn't realize you guys had a shot. So I just stood up and started walking away, and you guys weren't following. So I was like, okay, I'll get back down, and I stay hidden.
Yeah,
and then so when they bumped towards go ahead.
Yeah, we positioned kind of in a way because I figured they would bump that way because the back fence was there, and I knew they couldn't, unless there was a spot in the fence, I knew they couldn't get through it. So we tried to like work as close. The terrain back there, kind of what you guys ran into, was very flat. There were a couple like little gullies, but it really wasn't ideal. So you just kind of got to a spot and you just had to like sit there. So like I said, AJ made a 500-yard shot, shot high or low, and then made a follow-on shot at 325 or 350, whatever it was, made contact. It, like, he literally, that buck just dropped. So good hit. He was constantly like adjusting where he was shooting, and I was working the app that we had as far as like windage and distance, and I was ranging the herd. And then that was like, he literally shot probably 10 minutes before shooting light. The herd, after he shot twice, was still coming towards us, and it was at I think 225, but I had a doe tag, in which, if you've ever hunted antelope, the only really definitive part between a buck and a doe outside of the horns are their black face or brown splotches behind the cheeks.
The black cheek patch is what makes the difference in a doe and a buck, because does can have horns like bucks.
Yep. And actually all the doe I've shot have had horns. Actually this one, I'll save this part of the story for later, but I was having trouble discerning the cheek spots and the fat, the mask. I decided just to wait because it was too dark. And I was like, I'm not going to take a shot. It would have been an easy shot. But I waited. So we dragged AJ's out, literally the farthest point in the entire property to drag this buck out.
You're following.
But we made it. We swapped out.
Following the stars to the back of the road.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were like, our phones were running low because it was the end of the day. So we're like, all right, there's a star over there. We'll just keep going that way. but we made it out, no big deal. And it was cold enough that night. We just held onto it in the back of the truck, went back to our hotel, unloaded. And the next morning, we're like, all right, we'll run back out. We'll make one pass by the ranch, see what we see. If we find a herd, we'll go in stock, you know, shoot, and then, you know, go up. Because both Jack and AJ are traveling, so they did take stuff to the processor, and they process it while we're still hunting and freeze it. So did that morning, and Jack, I'll let you tell the story.
So what do you mean? You, like, took the meat to a processor and had them freeze it so you could bring it home, or you just had them process it while you were there?
So literally, you just roll up with your gutted antelope and drop it off at the processor, and they will skin it and process it like per your whatever liking, and they hard freeze it so that when you pick it up like 3 or 4 days later or at the end of your hunt, it's fully frozen.
So they're like doing a rush on it.
No, that's their standard time. They'll do a 24-hour rush, but like 3 days is their norm. Really?
That's cool.
And they like, they crank through game. They do a great job. We've used them several years. I've used them. I mean, I've traveled with them. AJ's dad last year had his stuff shipped back to Pennsylvania. Wow. Like, they do pretty good job. But Jack, I'll let you tell your story.
Yeah, so we start. We got up early the next morning, right, to get out there, and within
by early, it's like 15 minutes before sunrise. Okay, that's early.
Early for me, coming from Hawaii, still jet lag. we get out there and we do the typical, you know, drive by on the road, see what we can see, and we do spot a pretty good herd. So we drove by like 3 or 4 times trying to just find a spot where we could park and not have them see us. Like you guys had that same problem. So we ended up finding a spot down in a gully sort of near a water source we thought they might be working towards. Hopped out of the truck, started the stock from there, and just kind of followed the gully in, staying hidden. And then once we got to that last ridge, we knew they were over the other side. Justin and I kind of we made the plan for the command shot, and both started, you know, belly crawling over the ridge through the sage. Ended up coming on that. I think we think it was the same herd from the night before, right? Mm-hmm. So I saw there were two buck. I had a buck tag. You had the doe tag, and so I saw two buck, and I just kind of, you know, picked the which one I liked more than the other, and we both kind of had very small windows between the sage of like where to take the shot. You ended up just telling me to go ahead and take the shot. I don't think you had.
I couldn't get lined up on one. The sage was in my way. I was just like, I was not having a good shot lineup. So I told him, I was like, if you have a shot, just take it. Like, don't wait on me. And
yeah, so it just kind of lined up. The doe I was the buck I was watching just kind of wandered into my little window of sage grass.
And the blah!
Yeah, stopped for the little bite to eat, and sat right down.
Yeah, that was it. And then
you're like, good story, Jack. Moving on.
Yeah, no. I mean, that was,
so yeah, so this
was literally it. And
this was like at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, AJ and I already done. So Justin's the last guy with a tag.
Yep, with the doe tag, which is usually the easier to fill. Mm-hmm. And now we've got two bucks down, and I've got my doe, and I watched this herd who I'm in the very proper mindset to believe that this is the only herd on the property. So, I kind of start following after them. Like, they're moving slow, but they're still kind of weary. And then they get probably a quarter mile from where he had shot, and they like topped over a ridge. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to catch up with them. So AJ had tracked with me along for that, and then Jack kind of like stayed behind to check on his buck. And then Jack comes up like carrying my pack. I have two portions. I have like a large part of the pack, and I have a small part of the pack, which is like carries my water and snacks and like processing stuff. And so Jack brought that up for me, and I literally just threw that on, and I was like, AJ, you know, can you help Jack do the buck? You guys just give me a little bit. Let me see if I can catch up with the herd. So I ended up going. We were like, if you divided the property up north to south into quarters, we were in like the third quarter from the north. So at that point, I ended up trailing the herd all the way to the very far north part. And this is probably, I think, end to end, Jack, would you say probably 3 to 4 miles lengthways is the property?
Yeah, it's very, very long property.
Yeah, long and kind of skinny. Yeah. So I worked my way following the herd, trying not to spook them, but trying to stay in a reasonable spot I could see them. And I got back up to literally the spot where AJ had shot his the night before, and the terrain was not cooperative, and I couldn't get within 500 yards. So I ended up having to work almost halfway back, so probably a mile back, and then a half mile over and around, and I came over them on top of a ridge. And did you guys run into prairie dogs while you were there?
Where we were whitetail hunting, yes.
Yeah, they had a bunch of them.
But not very antelope hunting.
the prairie dogs are very alerting, and I think the antelope are just very synced up with the prairie dog activity, because, like, the prairie dogs just, like, I walked through every prairie dog colony that day, but in this particular moment when silence was of the essence, and I just, like, I knew where they were because I'd watched the antelope bed down, and so I worked back around to them, and I was probably 150, 200 yards from where I knew they were going to be, and I was working my way up this little ridge, and then all of a sudden I see, like, a doe head pop up, like, whoop, and I was like, oh, shoot, and, In between me and this doe, on top of this little ridge, is just like a 30 yard by 30 yard just
prairie dog colony.
Nope. Even worse, a bunch of like water puddles.
No.
And I was like, I can't even drop down and like belly crawl to where I can close, like, you know, just a little bit of distance to where I'm like peeking over the ridge. So I backed out a little bit again and went down like 100 yards and up and over. And by that time, when I kind of popped up over the ridge a little bit to see, she was standing up, and she was like standing up alert. I could tell the hair on the back of her neck was standing up. Like, so they knew something was up. The prairie dogs are going crazy. Like, I'm like, this is great. So I make like an unrested shot. I don't know the technical term.
Unrested shot. What does that mean?
There we
mean?
Go. Shoot.
It was unsupported.
There we go. That's the technical term. Thank you, Ryan.
We were also unrested when we took our shot. We've been traveling a lot.
Wanted to hear what unrested was.
Unrested. It's without a rest.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
So I have a bipod on my rifle, but I couldn't get down in a good position to shoot. In the puddle. No, I was out of the puddles this time, but prior to that, I refused to crawl through the puddles. I was like, I'm not going to crawl through the puddles, which is good because, so shooting, unsupported, I shot over the back of her. I was pretty bummed. But so the herd just like erupts at this point. And, I think I pushed them now to the far south part of the property. So we're going back. I literally made a big giant figure eight of the whole property. So I walk all the way back down and like chase them up a couple ridges. And then I get to a spot where I just lose them. And I'm like, well, okay. Luckily it was muddy enough just because like when you guys were up there, it had rained and snowed and the ground was still pretty muddy. I found their tracks and I tracked them for a ways. And then at this point, I think AJ and Jack had already peeled off for like an hour and were up at the processor. And so I was just kind of down on there. They dropped the rest of my pack that had my food in it, which I never ended up going back to because I just kind of spent my time chasing this herd. And I kept like, you know, sometimes, well, you guys may not know this because you're top notch ace in the hole shooters, but you always second guess your shot. And I was just like, there was one point when I shot that the herd like ran around and I missed a little window where they went behind a ridge, and they essentially like, I thought I could have went back and found them. So I popped up over the ridge. This is after walking the whole ranch and determining they weren't going to be there. I was like popped over this ridge and there's like an antelope there. And I'm like, oh, there's my antelope. And then I get closer and I'm like, that antelope's got horns. I was like, God, I hope that's not my antelope I shot. And then I really start to doubt myself. And then I get closer and I'm like, ooh, that antelope does not look good. So in my wanderings that day, this was the second antelope that I'd found that was like completely dead and like fur coming off of it. Big like bucks. Later found out there's like some bacteria in the water that depending on the time of year it freezes, they get like basically it's called, I think they call it, what was it, Jack? Blue tongue, right? Yep. Blue tongue.
They get blue tongue like deer do.
Yep. And so they said from the pond water, if it doesn't freeze early enough in the year that they get it. So that explained the two that I'd seen that were like nice size antelope, but just completely dead. I also thought that it was weird because they were both within proximity of prairie dog colonies and
there's lots of diseases prairie dog, there.
Yeah, like bubonic plague, and I'd walk through all of them. I was like, great.
Did you see fleas on you?
Yeah,
I don't know. Makes me itch though. But either way, so no luck there. AJ and Jack at that point had come back, brought me lunch, and we were like eating a cheeseburger and we're cruising. We decided to go like check out the southern part of the ranch. There was like, you know, like I said, that bottom quarter I hadn't been to yet. It's very hilly down there. Lots of draws. Really good for approaches and stalks. But up perched on top of one of these knolls was that antelope herd. And I was like, oh, great. Well, there they are. So we dropped back in near the road. They saw us and spooked. But I was like, Jack, hold on, because I don't know where they're going to go. And they could either go in front of us back to the north, back towards the northern part of the property, which is what I wanted. The southern part of the property they weren't going to go to because there was like mountains there. And then we cross up this little knoll and a doe meets me at like 50 yards. But I guess it's a rookie shooting mistake. I had my scope zoomed in all the way to 12. So I couldn't find the antelope in the scope. I'm like looking out the side of my scope trying to find it. And within this like 15 second window, she's like, nope, I'm done. And that's when Jack said, we see the herd of 40 antelope come like around this corner, drop down. They get what, Jack, 300 yards? And they're very like hesitant. This is not the same herd, by the way. We didn't even know this herd was on the property at this point, or until this point. And they're just kind of like slowly moving. So I'm like, all right, we'll get set up. We'll see if we can draw them in closer. And we had talked about earlier, and I don't know if you guys have heard of this trick before, but you ever heard of people waving like a white game bag?
Yep.
So in that time with the antelope 30 yards away, the only thing that we had that was white, yeah, Jack's dog. The only thing that we had was white, my sweatshirt, my fleece that I had, the inside of it was white.
Oh,
so like I took off my bino harness, I took off my pack, I like took off my sweatshirt, I tossed it to Jack, and he like held it up and waved it and then just held it there. And the antelope stopped at 300. And then the antelope turned and started walking towards us, and they closed another 200 yards. Another 100 yards, and then I took the lead antelope doe at 250.
Nice.
Like, but the white flag trick, which I only ever heard about, actually worked. Yeah. Yeah. They were like, oh, what's that over there? Must be another antelope. I'll go check it out.
Karen. Karen.
Karen, we thought we lost you to the blue tongue. Welcome back.
Kablam!
Kablam!
And this is how we're getting defunded.
It's great.
No, it's okay. People pay more to hear us. No, so that was good, and it wasn't too far a pack out for me. So we saved all three hearts from the antelope, which I have here, and then the liver off my doe, which I'm trying. So I did soak it in a hotel room in water as a precursor. I've already initiated the soaking process, so it's going to go through several phases of soaking.
Room? Yeah.
In the sink, yeah. They had a nice one.
I bet they loved
that. All right, well, the one we stay at there in the town where we antelope hunt, we don't do anything there, except for a couple of years I've forgotten hearts and livers in the freezer.
Oh yeah, you told me about that.
Oh yeah. They'll
call me and be like, hey, you forgot these, and the guy that we hunt on his land, I was just like, give it to him, and he takes them and eats them. But we elk hunted after this, which was unfortunately unsuccessful. I'll tell that story at another time, but we did give it a lot of good tries, just kind of the wrong place or right place at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. We always found where the elk were, but never really when they were. And then we just ran out of time.
Was it late season?
But I still – no, it's super early. Okay. They said the herd still haven't come down from the mountains yet. And we were kind of hunting a resident herd that lives on this one particular mountain. And half of it's private, half of it's public. And it's got some weird access. But we ran into some other hunters there, which was cool. And they're like, yeah, the herd was here like on Monday. And then today's Wednesday. And they're like, on Monday, we saw a guy like spook a ball. And so they're somewhere else on this mountain. So we made a couple other tries. And then our last morning, we made a really good approach, crossed a creek, used trash bags, contractor bags. We manned up, Jack. We did it.
Yeah, up to our ankles.
Yeah. only one person fell in the water, and it wasn't me, but I'm not going to tell you who. But his name starts with a J.
Hey, I was batting 500. That's pretty good.
Out of two. No, but that last day we got up, and I tell you, so my thoughts on whitetail in Wyoming, and a lot I'd heard and a lot I'd seen, is that they were pretty, pretty much stayed to the river bottoms and the agriculture fields. I'll tell you that at 6,000 feet on the side of a mountain, in two different fingers, we spooked herds of six or more whitetail.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were like, on a river bottom on agricultural fields.
Yeah, that's the perfect place.
Yeah, it was. And there, we didn't see any muleys. It was just all whitetail and pronghorn, and then the little family of prairie dogs.
Yep.
We only saw two muleys on the side of the mountain, two little forkies, and then that was the only muleys we saw. Everything else was whitetail.
We saw some boomers coming back that night at dark, driving.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
and turkeys. We got to see turkeys.
Oh yeah, Emily found her turkey spot.
Yeah. We found my turkeys. Literally right off the side of the road. I think one group is Merriam's and one group is Rio's.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Which I don't need the Rio's. I just need a Merriam.
I need both.
What? You haven't shot a Rio?
Mm-mm. I haven't shot a turkey.
Hey.
We have some people in Oklahoma. We could probably hook that up.
What else was I going to say? Oh, so the elk tag I have is a off forestry land, public land, cow elk tag. It's good through the end of December, so I'm going to try to go back up to Wyoming one more time. Yeah, so I still got some time to fill that one. But yeah, that was kind of like our... So all in all, our antelope collectively... 7 hours of hunting for antelope, and we filled three tags, which is pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good success rate.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And I think the longest part of that was me just walking around the ranch. Like, this probably 5 hours of that was just me walking.
You did. You brought down the average. Pretty good.
Yeah, I had a lot of time to reflect, though, so it's good. But we got some really great things coming to Harvesting Nature in the spring of 2022 as a result. But, you know. Outside of that, it was a good trip. I love Wyoming. It always holds a special place in my heart.
Yeah, we're a fan, especially, I mean, that little town we stayed in, Moorcroft, was very welcoming. It was a cool little town. What I would picture a little small mountain town to be in Wyoming was exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell everybody knew each other.
Very clean.
Yeah, super clean. Yeah, I want
to
go back.
Did you guys expect it to be dirty?
No, it's just...
Have you been to Southeast Oklahoma?
There you go.
I was born and raised there.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, there. You know. That was sarcasm. Usually go to small towns and it's... small towns.
No, it was funny. We were looking for a place to buy our whitetail tag. And I called the Wyoming Fish and Game and I'm like, hey, we just need to buy these tags because if you buy them online, they mail them to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we needed a physical place to go to, and she's like, yeah, there's this place called Blackbeard Marina or whatever it was called, and we're like, oh, okay, or the Black Anchor Marina or something. We're like, oh, we'll have to look where that's at, and I'm literally standing in our Airbnb parking lot looking up the address, and it was literally the building that owns the Airbnb that was right next to me, which I just hadn't looked at the front of the building yet, and I walked around and looked, and I'm like, oh, yeah, look at that. Yeah, our life is great. But no, it was really cool. Yeah, we're definitely going to go back.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think we should do it together next
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely.
Like I said in our executive meeting, that we should put in for hunts together.
Yeah. If only we had a hunt coordinator.
Fine.
Yeah, fine.
Good ideas get you work.
Sorry, that's breaking up here. I can't hear you anymore.
I can still see you just fine.
You can't.
what was I going to say? All right, so I think overall, like, good trips, both had by both. Let's do a quick last round. Jack, do you have any last thoughts on the trip?
No, I think we covered it all. We're gonna do another episode on elk, you think?
No.
Okay. Good talk. Got nothing to show
good
for
talk.
It.
No, we may talk about it in another episode, but I'll think about it. I think that so I'm still, I was telling you this, Jack, but I'm very much like in pursuit of elk, so I'm still sitting on a Colorado Plains elk tag and this Wyoming cow tag. So I'm really chasing redemption, because after two trips now I'm like elkless. I've still yet to see within the hunting season where I have an elk tag, an actual elk in the wild. So right. I'm very much chasing redemption. So I feel if we are able to cap that off, then we'll probably do a full, like, we'll bring everybody in. We'll bring all the people in and we'll tell all the elk stories. But yeah, until then, like, I think we summarized our trip there very minimally, so I'll save it. Plus I got some good video footage of that trip, so it'll be cool. Even the creek crossing, although I didn't get you falling
the successful creek crossing.
Yeah, so yeah, any other last comments besides your dog? Finn's got something to say. Finley,
he's getting restless.
Oh,
no, I'm good, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, Emily.
Just
last thoughts.
No, not really. Just keep an eye out on our YouTube channel for our video. We got a ton of footage. Mm-hmm. I think we're gonna have two or three different videos actually come out of it. So that'll be fun.
It was good. It was actually fairly relaxing. I'm not a morning person, so I was gonna be really upset if we had our hunt mornings and drive an hour from our Airbnb. So it was a good freezer filler for us.
I think for someone that's looking to expand their big game hunting after, you know, wherever they're at, whitetail, I think antelopes probably needs to be a go-to. It's relatively high success rate. It gets you traveling a little bit, gets you learning about different tags in different states, and I think it's an attainable goal, not out of the reach for most. So I think that's maybe just a stair step for someone that's looking to expand their big game horizons. It's kind of a good one, I think, to aim for.
Unlike elk or moose or something like that, where there's a lot of odds against you.
Yeah, kind of get you used to the drawing and the public versus private if you're not used to that. I know we're not used to that. So it was a good learning experience. We very, very much enjoyed it.
Nice. Well, I'm good. I'm glad you guys had a good time, and I'm glad you're interested in going back again, because it's super fun. Yeah. It's like one of my favorite hunts. One, I like the success, but two, I like Wyoming. I like the plain side of Wyoming, too. It's really cool. You guys have heard my thoughts on kind of throughout it. Like, I'm a big supporter of Wyoming. I think it's a really, really awesome place to go. Definitely check it out if you're interested in antelope hunting. There's lots of opportunities to do it. There's lots of opportunities to whitetail hunt. It's a good place to, like, combine tags if you really play your cords right and then kind of learn the system. And it's just fun. Overall, people are really great. Make sure you check out The Way We Hunt, as always. They have some great films and social media whatnots over on their channels. And after you make sure you're following them, go to, oh gosh, let's see, Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, Twitter, Tumblr, YouTube. What did I miss? Whatever else. Follow Harvest Nature, too. We're in all those places. Anywhere you go, we're there. And then whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch the 5-star button, leave us a review. You get a chance to win a hat, and tell us what we're doing wrong, or, you know, tell us what we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.